Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Constitutionalist number 11. Tonight, we're going to discuss the 11th Amendment. Well, I'm your host, one of your hosts. My name is Jeremy, and I'm here with the other host of the Constitutionalist, the chair of the Constitutional Republic Party here in Minnesota, and he goes by the name of Travis Bull Johnson. Travis, how are you doing tonight, brother?
Man, I'm doing great. Just happy to be here. You tell, fall's definitely in the air up here in Minnesota, but again, Mother Nature's been a little bipolar lately. We had, what, temperatures in the 30s at night last week, and now we're back up to 80.
I'm driving through St. Paul, Minneapolis.
Somebody give Mother Nature
speak.
Her meds.
Yeah, exactly. I'm on 494 in St. Paul, Minneapolis area by Bloomington right now, driving in rush hour traffic, and it's 83 degrees currently here. Yeah, last week was a little bit chilly. This week it's hot. I don't think she knows what – I think she's having a midlife crisis, honestly.
Yeah, it's beginning to be the same.
Before we get started tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just going to give you our call-in number. That way, if you want to call in and join the conversation, we're going to talk about a lot of different stuff tonight, including, obviously, the 11th Amendment. And we're going to get into some other subjects involving constitutional rights and a high-profile case that I'm sure you've all heard about involving Hunter Biden. We're going to get into that a little bit later. But that phone number, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to call in and you want to air your voice, your opinion, your thoughts live on air, uncensored. Just keep it respectful, because we do have younger people listening that, you know, we're trying to learn the Constitution, and we need, you know, try to keep that in the back of your head. But that phone number is 516-387-1733. And once you get through on that phone number and you can hear us over your phone, all you got to do is press the number 1. That lets my switchboard know that, hey, I want to say something. And we'll bring you live, and if you got a question for me or Bull, or if you have a question about the Constitutional Republic Party in general, you're more than welcome to ask those questions. And again, that phone number is 516-387-1733, and make sure that you press the number 1. All right, Bull, let's get this kicked off. So Bull's going to take the lead on this tonight, he's going to read what the 11th Amendment states, and then we'll start having a discussion about it, and then we'll move on into the Hunter Biden story, and we'll just keep it on rolling and for your entertainment. So go ahead, Bull. The floor is all yours.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about the 11th Amendment. The 11th Amendment was basically passed soon after the first 10 amendments were done. And basically it was over a fight between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. The 11th Amendment reads, "The judicial power of the United States shall not be construed to extend to any suit in law or equity commenced or prosecuted against one of the United States by citizens of another state or by citizens subject to any foreign state." So the reason they were doing this is, again, there was still this great fear by the states, by the representatives of the states, of a strong federal government. They kind of wanted to make sure their states remained free of federal interference. So this law was basically to put in there saying, hey, if you're not a member, if you're not part in a citizen of this state, you're a state from you're in another state, then you cannot go through the federal government to sue us as a state. Basically, that's against our state sovereignty. This was in response to, right after the Constitution was passed, there was numerous citizens from other states suing different states for war reparations, basically. One of those suits was Chisholm versus Georgia in 1793, in which a citizen of South Carolina sued Georgia for unpaid debt that occurred during the War of Independence. Georgia then claimed that federal courts were not allowed to hear suits against the states and refused to appear before the court. In 1793, the Supreme Court ruled that, hey, Chisholm's suit against Georgia could proceed in federal court. The court relied on the text of Article 3 explaining that between incompetent suits by and against the state. Several states, several suits against other states were pending at the same time as Chisholm was. And one of the senators from Massachusetts, Caleb Strong, quickly proposed an amendment that would become the 11th Amendment that would basically prohibit the people from suing another state through federal law, federal courts. Now, over the past 200 years, this amendment has been challenged many times, and it's gone back and forth. As early as late as, I believe it was 1976, there were some suits that were being allowed against states to fund the Superfund pollution sites to get them cleaned up. And it wasn't until the 1990s where that was once again overturned. So by the 11th Amendment, a person from another state was not allowed to sue another state. Now, eventually the Supreme Court even ruled that you can't even sue your own state if you're from that state based off the 11th Amendment in federal court. So basically, in order to sue a state, you have to basically sue them through their own court system in order to be able to do so. Now, there are some workarounds that the Supreme Court has allowed. So while I'm a resident of Minnesota, and according to this, I cannot sue the state of Minnesota in federal court. However, I can sue its officers in federal court. What do I mean by suing their officers? That means I could sue the Attorney General in federal court by things that he is ruling on as the Attorney General. I can't actually sue Minnesota, but I can sue the Minnesota Attorney General. And if they lose, then the state ends up picking up the bill anyway. So you can sue officers of the state, just not naming the state itself, which actually probably makes things a lot easier. Because if you actually sued the state, who exactly would you be suing? Who exactly would be the person representing the state? So this probably actually makes it easier for us to do so. But it definitely shows what I like about the 11th Amendment is it, again, shows what the status of people's minds were in this period of American history. It shows that the founding fathers, that the members of the states, the representatives of the senators from the states, were very against a strong central government, that they were strong believers in state rights. Otherwise, they would have never have put this safeguard into the Constitution to prevent the federal courts from being used to exert power over the states. What's your thoughts, Jeremy?
Well, excuse me. So before they ratified this in 1795, the Supreme Court ruled that it was unconstitutional that they created this as a law. Am I correct on that? So instead honoring the Supreme Court, they went ahead and just created it as part of the Constitution.
Right. Because
and
the Supreme Court stated that they could sue a state in federal court.
Correct.
They said under they said under Article 3 of the Constitution that somebody could sue another state in federal court. So they created this amendment to overrule what the Supreme Court had ruled, basically.
So basically I want the audience to understand, you know, when I talk about the government being corrupt and You know, you don't really quite under. I mean, you get it, but you don't get it. The government. This isn't a new thing that our government's been corrupt. Like, in my opinion, this is just my thoughts and my opinion. The original Bill of Rights, Amendments 1 through 10, were basically, you know, the law of the land. That was our forefathers' vision. And in my opinion, anything that happened after the 10th Amendment was corrupt politicians paving the way for what they wanted. It, you know, they didn't like that you couldn't do this. They didn't like that you couldn't do that. And again, this is just my opinion. So they go ahead and go behind the Supreme Court's back and make this a constitutional amendment. Now you hear them talking about, oh, we need to have a constitutional amendment for gun ownership, or we, you know, they always toss those words around. So when I say the government's has been corrupt, it's been corrupt for over 200 years, but the original Constitution, original Bill of Rights, has held up.
Well, and it's important to realize that the founding fathers put these mechanisms in the Constitution to change it because they realized it wasn't completely perfect. And, I mean, while I personally would not support a amendment to change the Second Amendment, it is the right of the people to do so if they so choose.
Right.
I personally would not support it, but, I mean, if they did, if they chose, if a majority of the people in the states chose to do so, there's not a whole lot we can do about it. But that avenue was intentionally put in there by the founding fathers, and it's one of the reasons why the Constitution is considered a living document. It continues to change as time goes on, as different interpretations or as different amendments are created. This is actually the 11th Amendment, as it was read in that time, did actually get slightly adjusted by the 14th Amendment on how the 11th Amendment was initially interpreted. The 14th Amendment came around, and basically they said, hey, you know what? Now Congress can pass laws to subject states to some suits in federal court under the 14th Amendment's power to redress discriminatory state action. So the 14th Amendment basically actually helped override parts of the 11th Amendment. And, in fact, that's actually what they used when I talked about a little bit earlier about the Superfund accounts for the toxic waste sites. That was the 14th is what they used to overrule the 11th to allow and they used Congress's Article 1 power to regulate interstate commerce to help back it up.
So, yeah, I understand. I don't know. I don't know if I like it or not. Honestly, I just just thinking about it a little bit. It's like, what's the point? What's the point of the 11th Amendment? I get it, so that you can't sue another state. But if that other state was involved in wrongdoing, and you can, why wouldn't you be able to sue them in federal court? Explain that one to me, like I'm a 2-year-old.
It was more because they didn't trust the federal government. They figured the federal government would use it to usurp power, the state's authorities, the state's power. Because, again, at this point in time, we're just getting free from England. We're getting free from that central federal power. And the founding fathers were just not in a hurry to put themselves under what could be England 2.0. They wanted to retain their state rights, and they were scared of giving that federal government too much power over the states. And that was the reasoning behind this, is they just did not trust the federal government to act in good faith in the federal court system. They felt that the federal government would be, they would use this to take power away from the states, that the states, the anti-federalists have been fighting to put that power in the hands of the states. They didn't want a strong federal government. And allowing federal courts to basically be run over, roughshod over the states in lawsuits was basically giving that federal government more power than they were comfortable with. That's why they passed that 11th Amendment. It was an effort to limit, again, to limit the power of the federal government. Because, again, remember, we've been going over the first 10 amendments. We've been going over the Constitution. The whole thing of the Constitution is to limit the power of federal government. And that's what exactly what the 11th tried to do, is further limit the power of the federal judiciary over what was considered the sovereignty of the states. Now, at the same time, what it further does is it weakens the systems of checks and balances. If your state screwing somebody over, and again, the way this originally reads is from a state, from a citizen from another state. Well, somehow, I mean, that's what it says in black and white. Well, somehow the Supreme Court has turned around and said, well, that also means citizens of your own state. Well, that's not what the amendment says. How do you decide, you know what, that also means from within your own state? And if you look at the amendment, I mean, they basically use that to say that foreign nationals from other countries also could not sue a state through the federal government. That, I believe, was like on that last sentence of that of the amendment.
Yeah. Yep, that's the last, very last sentence. So there's your explanation.
Again, I'm not a historian, but I mean, I try to look at it through the lens of what people were doing and thinking at that time.
Right. What did they mean by it? Because like this was ratified in 1795, so I mean that's been a long time. That's been over 200 years ago. So
what did they want to accomplish?
That's what I'm trying to figure out right now.
Yeah, and remember, at that time, and this is something I think a lot of people need to remember, is before the mid-1900s, your senators were actually appointed by the state. So this senator who brought this up was basically the equivalent of a state employee. Because the state's the one that – there was no popular election of senators. They were appointed by the governor to represent the state's rights. That's how our whole – again, that was part of how this whole thing – Congress was originally set up, was that the Senate would be appointed by the states and the people would elect the House. That was supposed to be part of your checks and balances of, well, the House represents the people – and the Senate represents the states. Well, now in today's environment, nobody really represents the states, which I think is a shame. Because again, I think that's what some of these checks and balances were supposed to act or supposed to. And if you looked at it today, with a majority of smaller states being red states, your Congress would be completely different today if that amendment had not passed later on to change the way Congress was structured. Right now you would have a GOP-controlled Senate because, again, it would be up to the governors to appoint these people. And again, that at that time, it was a senator who went to change this law because he was trying to protect the states, because that's where his loyalties lie, because that's who appointed him. The state appointed him.
Right.
To look out for their interests.
So there's the 11th Amendment in a nutshell, basically. It's not too hard of a one to, you know, just going through the history of it to, like, you got to take a little time to understand. Like Bull said, look at it through the lens of what the people that created these amendments, you know, the forefathers with the Bill of Rights, and then, you know, the 11th Amendment being ratified in 1795. What was their vision? Why did they do that? And just keep that in mind every time we talk about a different amendment or previous amendments. But, you know, earlier in the show, I said that, you know, we wanted to talk about regarding the Constitution involving the Hunter Biden indictment. Mm-hmm. And Bull brought up some really great points pre-show. And, you know, At first I was like, yeah, I cheered it on. But until Bull said this to me, and I'm like, oh, shit, I never even thought about it that way. But, like, huh. So I'm going to go ahead and just have Bull start that conversation out with what he told me pre-show.
Yeah. Well, and this is when you look at what the indictment with Hunter Biden on the weapons charges, I mean, there's a lot of people, especially on the right, who is cheering this on. And on one hand, I understand we all want to see the elites be held accountable. But let's take a minute and take a look at what he's being held accountable for. He's being held accountable for basically lying on a permit to buy a weapon. Well, first of all, as we discussed a few weeks ago or a few months ago now, should a permit to buy a weapon even be – is a permit even to be constitutional? Because, again, that is a
– Hey, Bull,
I don't mean
to interrupt you. We have we do have a caller. Before we get too deep into this, and just in case
okay.
It's a question about the second or the 11th Amendment, I'll bring the caller on 1111. You are on the air with Jeremy and Bull. What would you like to add to the conversation tonight?
Hey, yeah, I wanted to talk about this 11th Amendment issue that you guys are discussing. First things. I want to recommend something. If you guys get a chance, check out this book. It's called Sovereignty, and by Peter Russell, and it's basically Sovereignty, the Biography of a Claim. Now, in this book, he's a historian and a political scientist, Peter Russell, in Canada, and he ends up meeting with this Native American tribe in Canada because they were trying to fight a pipeline that would go through their land. And to start the book, like just get into the book and you'll see kind of where I'm going with this. But to start the book, as he sits with the chief from this Native tribe, one of the young women asked a question based on what the chief wanted her to ask. They said, "How did your queen get sovereignty over us?" That was the question the Native American tribe wanted to ask the Canadian history professor. So to check that book out when you get a chance, get an idea. Because sovereignty, I think, is a really important word, especially within the context of this conversation. Now, here's the other part. Now, when we talk about the 11th Amendment and we start hearing those states' rights claims, you got to understand how black people's ears prick up when we hear that. Because for the most part, when we hear states' rights, we're normally considering hearing something that is either undemocratic or something that disfavors black people in a certain region. And the people on the other side fully enjoy the idea of us not being included in whatever decision-making is going on. So right there, off the bat, we're starting off at a deficit within the conversation. Now, I get where you guys are coming from, where you're saying, no, we just don't want an authoritarian government, and overreach has to be stopped at the beginning. You can't stop it midstream. I get all of that. But my question would be, when we start talking about some of this stuff like the 11th Amendment, we got to ask, are we talking about how a regional, small place should be governed who didn't have international power? Hell, we didn't even have embassies in certain powerful nations at the time. Yeah, think about who we were back then. And now you compare that to the colossus that we are, which is, you know, probably biggest empire still going. I don't know if we say that in polite company, but that's what we are. So I don't know if that actually can hold, where you have, you know, all these different positions fighting each other. when in all actuality, you're going to need a centralized government if you're going to be, you know, one of the two, you know, last world powers, you know, on the world stage. So I'll just end there, and I want to get you guys' opinion. But, yeah, good hearing from you guys again, man. I called you guys a couple months ago.
Yeah, no, we appreciate your call, man.
And I agree. I said that's why when we look at a lot of this stuff, we have to look at it with the lens of time. Even today, I mean, and I consider myself a constitutionalist that believes in a small, limited power federal government, but at the same time, I acknowledge that there are topics and subjects that the federal government does have absolute domain over, such as foreign relations, such as national defense. And I will point out again that when the 14th Amendment was passed, the that amendment is kind of what also limited states' rights when it came to the need for addressing I believe the term they used was redressing past discrimination. That was put back on the giving the federal government that power back to the federal government to address some of those same issues. But I do very much agree with the caller, and that's in the fact that, yes, a lot of the states, especially in the late 1900s, would lean on this state's rights to keep the government out of their backyard, so to speak, to let them run their, for lack of a better term, their fiefdoms at this time. We have to acknowledge that in the 250 to 300 years since the time the Constitution was originally written, technology at that point it was impossible to run a country from another. I mean, you had to send your representatives. It would take 3-4 months sometimes to get your representatives to Washington D.C. So it wasn't a case of, well, let me check back and see what they think back in Louisiana or Georgia or wherever other state it was. And with that time, how time has changed, as communications has changed, I mean, that's why I was mentioning earlier that the framers of the Constitution gave us this great ability to be able to change the document with time. I mean, there are some amendments, i.e. prohibition, that were basically just completely thrown out later. And we have that ability. The problem is, and this is as I see it right now, is we're kind of handcuffed from being able to use that ability right now because the country is so divided, and I think that's kind of what the two-party system strives to do, is keep that party, the country, so divided, so we can't ever really change anything one way or the other. That's what these two parties are being. That way, these two parties can continue to run on the same things they always run on, because nothing actually gets to change. Because we won't be able to get the percentages required to change a constitutional amendment because the country is so divided. But we need to be able to do so.
And I still have your mic up, caller. So if you want to add a comment on what Bull just said, you're more than welcome. You're mic'd up yet.
I think we disagree on the margins here. Like, I get where he's coming from. He's saying he's not coming with the states' rights idea of, like, some Jim Crow stuff. He's just talking about as far as elite control, the two-party system, where you got to get 150 billion signatures for a third party to have a real chance. And if you don't have the money, good luck with that. So, yeah, I definitely understand what you're saying. Because one thing we know about the two parties that they do agree on is they don't want a third party coming in and ruining the grift just by being involved, period. So if you watch, the Dems will fight the Green Party like hell and the Republicans will fight the Libertarian Party like hell because they know those two things represent a challenge to them. So, yeah, that's the difficult part. Now the Hunter Biden stuff, look, I don't understand how people are going for this. Because point blank period, this just seems like, okay, they're going to give you a pawn and they're going to take a rook from you. So it's like, okay, you let this Hunter Biden thing go, then they're going to come after Jared and Ivanka with both barrels, as they should, because if we're looking at criminal activity by, you know, family members of elected officials, then all of those people would meet the criteria. So I think the Dems have no problem throwing Hunter over. They're like, look, dude, this dude had drug problems and all this other stuff. Red-handed, caught on multiple things. If you guys want to make him a sacrifice from us, hey, no problem. They'll throw him to you. They just know the bigger prize is on the other side, which would be Jared and Ivanka. Yeah. And, you know, where you go from there, I don't know. You cite the case as far as gun regulation by saying a mistake on an application can lead to prosecution. Wait a minute now. We're getting into some dangerous areas here.
Yeah. Well, and my point I was getting to on that was that the question that he lied on was basically whether he used illicit substances, whether he used drugs or not. Well, if we go back to our Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination, the government doesn't really have the authority to ask that question. He should not have to answer it in order to get his Second Amendment rights, because you're basically admitting to the government that, yes, I am breaking the law, which they can now use against you to prosecute you.
Which is against your Fifth Amendment, right?
Right, it's against the Fifth Amendment. They are not supposed to be able to require you to do that, especially not to exercise your other constitutional rights. That's my whole point on this, is that I think there are so many people who are just so happy that they're going after Hunter Biden for something that they're failing to recognize that, hey, wait a minute, what they're going for on him is basically they asked him an unconstitutional question, and now they're punishing him because of the way he answered it, because he refused to self-incriminate himself. He basically said no, because if he says yes, then, of course, now he's admitting to illegal drug activity, which he has a right not to answer yes. But the thing is, if he doesn't answer, then they say, well, fine, you can't get a gun. We're not going to authorize you your permit. So it's kind of a catch-22 in the fact that they're asking a illegal question. It's kind of like some of the questions that I've got a human resources degree. There are some questions in an interview that we are not allowed to ask. Why? Because it could lead to discrimination. Well, that's the same type of thing here. There are some questions that the government should not be allowed to ask on this form because it could result in self-incrimination. And that is what they're going after him for, is for, quote unquote, lying on the federal application by refusing to say he was a drug addict. Well, you know what? If I wanted a gun, I know damn well that I couldn't say yes, even if I was doing drugs at that time. So it's kind of a, why is that question on there? Because people who are actually using it will never admit it on the form to begin with. I mean, all it does is gives them a back door to be able to arrest somebody if they're later found that wasn't true. You may not be able to get them on anything else, but damn it, you signed the form. I'll get you online on the form. And what I think people don't realize with this is, and because there is a bunch of people who are screaming that Hunter Biden, and I don't like, let me put this out, I don't like Hunter Biden. I think he's corrupt. I think he needs to be in jail for the way he has basically abused the fact that his father was president. But on the gun, on this gun charge, I just think it's an unconstitutional charge. And even if I don't like the guy and I think he deserves to be in jail, I want him to be in jail for the right reasons, not for something that basically they will use to justify further eroding our rights. And that's how I see this playing out. If the GOP or the right basically celebrates he gets busted and he goes to jail on these gun charges, well, basically it's the GOP saying, yes, these are good. This is the right answer because it got him in jail. But at the same time, they reaffirm those questions and the government's right to require permitting. And that's where I think that the right is missing their opportunity here, because they could come up here and back Biden against these charges. And guess what? If Biden wins, we're a freer country because now they can't ask that question anymore. Now that's one less thing that they can use against the American people. And that's just the point I want people to think about. I mean, yes, I mean, sometimes it's just by any means necessary mindset people have. We'll do anything necessary to punish this guy. What does that mean, giving up or acknowledging that you're right, by failing to acknowledge that your rights are violated every time they ask that question and they demand an answer before they'll allow you to own your practice, your Second Amendment rights?
Yeah,
and, you know, that kind of ties it kind of ties into the governor in New Mexico with her unconstitutional emergency order to ban people from carrying guns in the one certain city in one certain county, Albuquerque. And then a federal judge jumped in and put a hold on that order and said it's unconstitutional. And then she, facing a backlash from the public, statement that she is, after all, she's not going to do that now. So that was, I wanted to take that moment to clarify that when these public officials do something unconstitutional, it is not only our right, but it's our duty to stand up and scream from the top of our lungs, that is not constitutional, and you cannot do that. And when we do that, you've seen what happened with New Mexico. She was forced to back down on her position with that emergency order. Now, I completely understand why she issued it, because there was some children that were shot, and she's trying to do something about that violence, but she's going about it unconstitutionally. And that's why we need to continue to stand up. But go ahead, caller. I know you wanted to say something there.
No, I was just going to add, that just shows checks and balances actually work when they're applied properly. But, you know, just to go back to the Hunter thing real quick, just understand, when a party does not want people digging into everybody's campaign financing and illicit money from overseas that they would not like publicized much, that's how you get this Hunter Biden charge about the gun situation. So basically, this is the GOP saying, as much as we want to get Hunter, we don't actually want you looking in that drawer. We're going to go to another drawer in order to convict him because we don't want too much exploration over there, which can lead back to bad results for us. So I mean,
and if you go to jail for this, nobody's going to care about the rest of the stuff.
Yeah. This is, you know, it's shameful, but, you know, this is what they're doing. Now, the problem with the whole idea about the drug situation with that is they're definitely going to be able to, like, you know, have a paper war on that, and they're going to win with the idea of if somebody's on some type of medication because of, you know, mental health or something like that, then they'll make the statement that that is what the question is for. It's not to retroactively come get you because you smoked marijuana in 1989. You know what I mean? So that's what they're going to be able to lean on that. So I don't know how you win that one because, as you know, billable hours is the only thing that matters when it comes to cases of that size, and they will get all the lawyers they need. So, yeah, man, thanks for letting me on, guys. I know you got to continue on with your show, but this was interesting, man. You guys gave me some things to think about.
Hey, you know,
I appreciate the call.
You did the same with us, man. And that's why callers are so important to this show, is because to a certain extent, I mean, we try to avoid being in an echo chamber, but at times we are. And we need that those voices coming from outside are where we normally operate, so to speak, to give us those other, as the caller pointed out. I mean, when you're a person of color and you hear stuff like states' rights, well, yeah, those states' rights were used a long time to brutalize and to basically keep the federal government out of their backyard as they abuse and they discriminated against people for decades and centuries. And I think that is a good reminder to us to remember that.
Indeed.
Yeah. No,
and the far
and
left guy.
Thank you.
I'm out of my echo chamber talking to you guys. So same thing, bro. Thanks, y'all.
No, thank you very much for the call. I do appreciate it, my man, and we look forward to hearing from you again. So,
hey, where are you calling from? Where are you calling from?
Oh, I already cut him off. Sorry, man.
Okay.
If I remember right, I think he was calling from Minnesota. If I remember right, if that was the one, I can't remember for sure, but I'm sure we'll hear from him again. But like Bull was saying, it is important for people to call in. You know, then you get to hear a different perspective from somebody else. It's not, you know, me and Bull, you know, beating on the same drum every week. And you get to hear from a different person with a different perspective and a different thought process than what me and Bull have. And I sure appreciate it. So, I really do appreciate his call. And I hope he calls back in next week. So.
And you don't have to agree with us, okay? Let me put that out there. I mean, you may have a different interpretation as we do, and we'd like to hear it, okay? We are not the guys who will – somebody comes on and don't agree with us. We're not going to sit here and try to cut y'all down and explain why we're right. We'll discuss it. We'll talk about it. But, I mean, we value your opinions. Hell, that's the problem we have with half of our damn politicians is they don't value any opinions besides their own. And that's why we want to be different.
Right. And this is how we can get things changed in this country is by you calling in and disagreeing with us. You have, like Bull said, you have a different interpretation. That's great. That's awesome. Then you tell me what your interpretation is. I want to hear your perspective. I want to understand where you're coming from because – listen, I will stand corrected if I'm wrong about something. Number one, I will admit that I was wrong. Number two, I want to have a civil discussion, a conversation, and let's come to find that middle ground that we once had that we've lost. I think that's important for everybody. So we always encourage anybody to call in, and if you're not completely agreeing with me or us, that's fine. That's great. So just so you know that, and like Bull said, we're not here to point fingers and call names. We want to have a discussion with you. Let's understand each other, and let's get to the bottom of this crazy corruption that we're seeing in our government. So what else did you want to – did you want to add anything else, Bull, or are you good with that conversation with the Hunter Biden? Did you get to touch what you wanted to – talk about on that?
Yeah, no, I kind of touched what I wanted to touch on there, and I do like that what the caller had pointed out, that people also need to realize if they are successful against Hunter Biden, well, guess what? The next ones they're going to go after are probably going to be Ivanka and Jared. And because at the same time, you could bet that especially not Ivanka and Jared as much, as Donald Trump Jr. and the boys who are actually running the Trump Corporation while Donald Trump was president, they were very much leveraging his name to increase the value of Trump properties worldwide. And they very much name dropped Dad when they were trying to get permits in Scotland as well as in Russia, in Moscow for projects that they wanted to move forward. So I think it is important to realize that, you know what, this happens during all presidencies.
It goes back to be careful for what you wish for.
Yeah.
Because
it might nip you
in the ass on that one.
I'm old enough to remember Billy Beer. So those of you who don't remember or don't know that because you're not nearly as old as dirt as I am, is President Jimmy Carter had a brother named Billy. And Billy tried to find his fortune running on Jimmy's coattails by having a beer company called Billy Beer.
Billy Beer.
Based off of – what's that?
I said Billy Beer.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yep. So, I mean, he tried to do Billy Bear again, trying to write off of his brother's name, his brother's coattails. I mean, we've seen this time and time again. The only time I guess we probably haven't seen it is when the kids have been too young to take advantage of it. Like the Chelsea Clinton, when she was when Bill was in the White House, she couldn't take advantage of it. But who was his brother? He had a brother who was trying to take advantage of it.
Roger.
Yep. And I mean, so this is kind of a common thing with every president seems to have some relative who tries to leverage their relationship with the president to benefit them personally. I mean, if we want it to stop, I mean, we're going to need to, God, I hate saying anything about creating laws because we got too many of them as it is. But we need to form some type of ethics policy to address this because it is going to keep on happening. People are always going to try to leverage their relationship with somebody who's famous, whether it's a president, somebody in the music industry. They always try to peddle that influence. I mean, and as the president or as the office holder, it's always going to be hard to be able to draw that line. Because you don't always know what is being promised behind your back as the office holder.
Well, we all know that there is backroom deals going on every aspects of our federal government, for sure, if not all governments, including your local school boards all the way up to the feds. We know that is happening. You look at senators, okay? They come into office and their net worth is like $200,000 or $300,000, and they serve a couple terms and they leave office and they're worth $40, $50, $100 million. Like, you don't do that off of a senator's salary. I mean, you look at what was her name that got beat out in Cheney, Liz Cheney. Her net worth grew $40 million in 7 years, ladies and gentlemen. That don't happen off of a Senate salary, and you cannot tell me that you're that good at trading on the stock market that you just got lucky. No, you were
money. The Cheney family has always had that kind of stupid money because of their contacts with the I believe it was with the oil industry and with the defense industry.
Halliburton.
Yep.
Halliburton. Dick Cheney was the CEO of Halliburton. They got the contract for the Iraq War, and they made a ton of money off of our backs, off of our taxpayer dollars. A ton of money.
Yep.
So just keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen. I don't like to point my finger at one person or the next because I think they're all corrupt, if you want my honest opinion. But, again, it goes back to, everybody cheering on Hunter Biden or get that, SOB. But you got to remember that this is happening with people that you trust and believe in. They're doing probably the same thing that he's been doing. I just think Hunter and Joel, they're just really corrupt. They've got pages and pages of what they've been doing.
At this point, I don't know how corrupt Joe Biden is the fact that he's just not even coherent about what's going on around him.
Mm-hmm. That's the scariest thing for me. The guy can't even form a sentence.
I got one more thing I want to throw out here tonight.
Oh, absolutely.
Me and the Libertarian Party have a complicated relationship. There's a lot of things I don't get along with them about right now. I used to be a member of that party. But they did something this week that I have got to tip my hat off to them, that I highly love and I highly respect, and I just thought it was the best thing in the world. If y'all have not heard about it yet, the Libertarian Party has filed legal conservatorship paperwork to take conservatorship of Mitch McConnell, and Joe Biden.
Did they really?
They did, stating that they were not mentally well, and as an organization that they were filing to take over their personal matters because they were not competent to do so on their own.
Well, I mean, I'm glad you brought that up. I didn't know about that, number one. Number two, if you guys haven't heard, but Mitch McConnell had another one of his freeze-ups where he was talking at a press conference, and all of a sudden he just starts staring at the wall, like, and he can't even move. And
yep.
One of his helpers comes over and, did you hear the question, Senator? And tries to play it off as, oh, he must not have heard it. And so when you guys ask a question, can you speak up a little bit? No, the guy is not mentally there. And I'm not saying that to be mean, but he's not. And neither is Joe Biden. And I'm not saying that to be mean. But the obvious is the obvious. We can't allow people like that to be serving people in our Senate or our presidency.
And so I'm real interested to see how that ends up playing out, because it is possible that the courts can then rule for a competency hearing.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
this could get interesting fast.
When I saw that, and that's one of those things, I don't know how that's not being carried under every news that's out there, but when I heard about that and because they've supposedly already, they've actually filed the legal documents for it with the courts. So I'm really curious to see how this plays out, because normally I'm against a lot of their edge lording, because I think they're just doing it for publicity, and they don't really have the interest in actually being able to change a lot of things. They're making a lot of noise. But this one actually has the potential of being able to do something. So I'm really curious to see how this ends up playing out, because apparently they've got a legal backing to do it. So, I'm really curious to see how that plays out, because if that actually, it's gonna be funny to see how that goes. I mean, of course, the courts will probably end up throwing it out to protect the status quo. But you never, especially because they're going after one of each party. So there's some balance there.
Well, we all know that our court systems and, everything, a lot of the things of our in our system it's kind of broken. It's not kind of broken. It is broken. Our system is broken on multiple facets. But that is a very interesting move by the Libertarian Party to actually go through with charge or courts like that, because that could bring some real trouble in our government. Yet, like you said, though, I don't think they're going to let that go very far, because too many people would be affected by that, including the President of the United States.
I do have to tip my hat to them on the cojones to do it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that. I think that's fantastic that they're at least making a move, because obviously somebody needs to do that right now. You know, with this government, it's just so completely out of control. So, it's another successful night with the constitutionalists. This was number 11. Next week we'll have number 12. I appreciate the caller calling in, and anybody that listens, please give us a share out. Help us grow our audience a little bit. Earlier in the show, I told you that Bull is the chair of the Constitutional Republic Party .us here in Minnesota. It is registered with the Fed. I sit on the executive board at large. Everyday Americans that want to see a change in our government, and to help all of us, not if you're a Democrat, not if you're a Republican. We're tired of the two-party system, and we just want to see a change. So that's why we get on here and discuss different things on Tuesday nights. So, Bull, thank you for coming on and taking the lead tonight and the caller. We sure appreciate that, and I'll let Bull say his final words, and then we'll sign off for the night.
Hey, I want to thank everybody for listening in. I especially want to thank our caller. These shows are a lot more fun when we have other callers, people who call in to participate. Otherwise, at times it can feel like we're talking to each other, talking to ourselves. So we really appreciate when y'all reach out to call us. If y'all are enjoying the show, tell other people about it. Spread the word. Because, again, the more people we have actually talking about our Constitution, the better. Okay, there's less chance that it's going to go by the wayside. Because we're to the point now, I don't really trust the schools to really give the Constitution the attention it deserves. So anytime we can get somebody and get a real true discussion going, I think it's great for everybody involved. So thank y'all for showing up, and have a great night from my perspective.
All right. Thanks, Bull. And thank you again to everybody that listens and the caller again. We do appreciate you guys' calls and having that discussion. Again, we don't have to agree, but we can sit down and have a civil discussion about it so we can both walk away, or all of us walk away with a different perspective maybe. So on that note, we're going to end the Constitutionalist number 11. Join us next Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central as we discuss the 12th Amendment. And every Tuesday night, we'll discuss a new amendment to the Constitution. And once we get through the Constitution, then we'll start talking about cases that involve the Constitution and how that has played out. And there's a lot of different things we can talk about. Let's put it that way. So anyway, thank you guys for joining, and we'll see you all next Tuesday night on the Constitutionalist number 12 at 6 p.m. Central Time. Have a great night.